Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and welcome to the ghost story episode.
Ooh.
And sitting on the ugly couch of comfort is Trish Conklin.
Hey, everybody.
And Sam Stepanenko.
Hello, hello, hello.
I just realized I didn't even introduce you guys last week.
That's okay. They know who we are by now.
That's right. That's true.
We're mysterious.
That was a long episode, the old boy episode, so it's not like I had room for introductions.
Well, you know, it's just epic about the facelessness of your antagonist.
That's right. And this week it was old boy, or ghost story. Oh my God, old boy. That's still on my brain.
Old boy brain.
See, for you guys, you know, it's been a week. For us, it's been about 20 seconds. We're double recording today. And it's also WrestleMania Sunday we're recording on. And
yep.
I seem to remember us doing the same thing on Super Bowl Sunday. So we don't give a fuck about sports, even the fake ones.
Nope.
So true.
Don't care.
So Ghost Story, 1981, directed by John Irvin, and screenplay by Lawrence D. Cohen, who also did screenplays for It, Carrie, the Tommyknockers, and yeah, Stephen King stuff. And this was based on a novel by Peter Straub.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars a crazy all-star cast of Craig Wasson, who was in Malcolm X and Elm Street 3, Alice Krieg, you guys might remember her as the Borg Queen.
Yep.
For you Trekkies, I am one of them. I am totally on board. She was one sexy Borg.
She's amazing. Like, she's one of those actresses, you know her when you see her, but when you say her name, you're like, wait, who's that? Like, she's been around.
And I had that in my head when I was writing my notes. I always kind of write the movie stars and the directors out before I actually watch the film and have my notes ready so I can make notes on top of their heads.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Fred Astaire.
Yes.
Last film he ever did.
Last film. And this, he plays Ricky Hawthorne. John Houseman. Anybody who's like, John Houseman. He's the guy who sits in a chair and tells stories.
Yeah.
Did he do anything else? That's
The Paper Chase.
The Paper Chase.
The Paper Chase, yeah. He was also in The Fog and, of course, Scrooged.
Yeah.
And by Scrooged, by that point, he was just the guy in the chair who tells stories.
Yeah, he's one of those voice guys that you remember.
He's a intense voice guy, yeah. Melvin Douglas.
Who passed away just before the movie came out.
Yeah. Douglas Fairbanks Jr.
Also his last movie.
Yeah. So maybe this is real. These guys were dying.
And that is kind of the basic plot. Is Alice Krieg is this, she plays Alma or Eva, depending on the time we are talking about, because there's flashbacks. This whole movie's a flashback.
Yeah.
A good half of it to two-thirds of it is flashback sequences. Actually.
Yeah, just sure. Them recounting their past stories. And Yeah, this ghostly visage shows up and usually startles people to death that causes their own death.
Yep.
In a bit of Final Destination.
Well, I don't know. I always thought kind of Ringish, where it shows up and scares the hell out of them till they die.
Yeah, I actually had flashes to that as well. I was trying to think of how to handle my remake, and I think a meshing of that J-horror with the gothic tone this movie is trying to do.
Yeah.
Don't forget it was 1981. Yeah. So
I saw gothic movies in 1981 more effective than this one.
True.
Now, this is the ghost trying to get revenge on people who wronged her in her past life-ish. It's kind of confusing because there's a whole second life that she's a ghost in. So it's really weird in that regard. But these guys are all in their 80s. She could have just waited 10 seconds for them to pass on their own.
Yeah.
I mean, like, why did you wait so fucking long?
I think this is the whole thing. Like, I mean, this goes back into our old boy thing. Like, if, do you have to wait so long for vengeance? Like, I mean, he had an excuse. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He had an excuse. She has no excuse.
Well, I think part of her motivation is because she wants not only revenge on the men who did her wrong, but also their offspring.
Yeah, but...
Right? Because that's a key factor. They are key players in the whole...
Only one of them has offspring. In the movie.
That I'm surprised more weren't introduced. These group of old men, these four main
And she
men,
doesn't go after their wives.
Yeah, they're called, they dub themselves the Chowder Society. And they tell her, why, I have no idea.
New England?
No, they're in Vermont, so that doesn't even make sense.
Oh, okay, yeah, then I got nothing.
So I don't know, but they're childhood friends that grew up together, and they go to some dude's really nice, loungy living room.
It's a lovely place.
And tell ghost stories to each other.
Which in and of itself is kind of a fun idea. People don't do things like that anymore.
No.
I kept having like flashbacks of like, and we discussed it with the person I was watching it with, that whole thing where Frankenstein came to be. Was there
the
these
Mary
four?
Shelley.
Yeah, Mary Shelley. They were at this castle and they challenged each other to write a ghost story to tell.
Yeah, and I got the feeling that was what the opening of this was something similar to them. Like, these guys grew up in the 20s and 30s in their flashback, so this isn't really a television era they come from.
It's their entertainment.
It's a different type of entertainment. I mean, radio is still the fairly new thing when they would have been young, so, you know, this is how they entertained each other. They came around and told stories, and there's something really cool and quaint about that.
Yeah.
And certainly social interaction versus, well, no interaction at all in a lot of cases, but...
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, and it's like this insular thing, this whole group doing this. They're all very high ranking in that town as well.
Yeah. They are, and there's that opening sequence, there's this really great line saying, they talk about how the young people today won't even be wearing ties anymore except to special occasions, to weddings and funerals.
Mm-hmm.
They're all tuxed out to just see each other.
Yeah.
I loved that. I thought that was really great. It's sort of the last generation of gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Well, considering how they behave, I wouldn't call them gentlemen.
But
I'd call it like just the particular type of manners.
Yes.
Not so much gentlemen.
Yeah.
And even then, I didn't think they were that terrible. Like, people make mistakes in their youth, and
I know, but...
it was really just an accident. But skipping ahead, spoilers.
I know.
I don't
know. It starts getting 40-year-old
movie.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it yet, you're probably not going to. And after you hear what Jay and Trish have to say, you probably won't. I, for one, like the movie.
Oh, I didn't mind the movie, but like for spoilers, I bet you there's some of our listeners who weren't even alive when this movie came out.
I was about to bonk my head on my microphone because I was texting you guys.
It's just it's too long.
It is slow.
This is the second week weekend of Batman v Superman, which is 2.5 hours long, and I'm not going to go into my review of that. But this movie was hour 50. Seemed longer. A lot longer.
Well, I didn't even really get a grip on what was going on till well over an hour.
Oh, yeah. I'd say so. I'd agree with that. I'd say a good 45 to 60 minutes before things started to fall into place and I started to learn people's names.
Yeah, like I'm all for creating tension, but if you leave it too long, it starts to lose its tense.
There were a lot of unnecessary scenes in the movie. Now, I mean, we haven't done the first watch bit yet.
Well, yeah, which we should. I have seen this movie before. I don't remember when. That's how long ago it was. I got the feeling I probably saw it when I was having trouble sleeping, and that cured it. Because I think I was watching it yesterday about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I could barely keep my eyes open during this movie. It is a cure for any kind of insomnia. It's like taking a sleeping drug. It's, oh my God.
Well, I think it's because I don't mind a long movie that is kind of a slow burn as long as I have something to cling to throughout this. But there's so much vagueness in some of the dialogue that I don't, like, I need to have at least a hint of what might be going on. Then I'm willing to follow it through. But it was so hard to get a good grip in.
Yeah.
For like the early parts of it.
Yeah. See, now I saw it when I was a teenager
mm-hmm.
in the early 80s or the mid 80s. And I remember going, not getting it. I do remember that going, you know, I'm not sure that I really understood the movie. And then I saw it again about 10 years ago and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's some good thoughts in it. There's some really good nuggets in it.
A good story. I think that as a movie, there are significant flaws.
Oh God, just whoever wrote the screenplay, I just felt like they were stringing random words from a thesaurus together.
Yes, but like, apparently if you read the book, it makes sense.
Okay, because it didn't even feel like a natural conversation most of the time.
But in the context, in my research about what was in the book, that dialogue makes sense. But because you don't have that background, it seems random.
It totally seems random.
There was some of that, absolutely. And it's odd coming from a writer who made a living basically converting novels to screenplays from the sounds of it.
Yeah. Like, I think he got rid of probably some very key stuff that would have helped.
He also didn't have a very long list. Like, there were, I think, two movies that weren't Stephen King movies.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And granted, they were good ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Stephen King novels, I don't know how they can continue to make bad Stephen King adaptations, because his books are written like movies.
Yeah. Well, even the what are considered bad aren't terrible.
Well, there's a few, but not very many.
Yeah. I always enjoy a Stephen King movie. Even if it's done badly, it's still interesting enough to watch.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, usually the bad ones are just, they're goofy enough that they probably shouldn't have been made as movies.
I think the only ones I've ever been frustrated by is when they get rid of a key point that helps make things make sense, which is probably where this went wrong.
I think probably all the keys were missing. somebody just like wandered down and, oh, all the keys are gone. Yeah. I can't get into my car. That's how this whole movie feels to me. The key elements are gone. I feel like most of the actors don't even understand the lines they're delivering.
No.
They've got no context for a lot of them.
There's not a lot of context, and it's so stiff and dry from everyone.
Well,
and we're talking some opening first hour and a half.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that opening scene, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, what am I in for?
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense.
I don't, like, we were doing the first watch, and I don't really remember when I watched it, but I remember elements of it, and I pretty much guarantee that I never actually saw the whole film, because much like yesterday, I think I was slipping into a coma.
Yeah, my first watch was, like, just for this podcast.
Right.
So I felt compelled to look up the book, because I needed something to figure out what was happening.
Yeah. It does come together. I mean, you almost feel triumphant when you piece it all together.
Yes.
So there is a payoff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and again,
given, you have to work at it.
Yeah. It would, given when it was made, I'm maybe a little more forgiving, but there are, like, certainly flaws and missing elements, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it opens with a guy falling out of a window, and I'm going to defer this one to Trish because she gave me a good joke while we were texting yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I was talking about how, like, the guy falling out the window, and we get really nowhere with it or why or how or when. Like, it's an hour and a half before we figure out what the fuck is even going
on. Okay, let me set this up. We open up on a bathtub that is full to the brim and overflowing and still running. Nobody's in there. We don't know why. There's this
guy
naked,
in a towel.
Yeah, this guy in a towel and this naked girl lying face down. And he's asking,
Who are you?
Who are you? It's all...
Shouldn't you know?
Yeah, you woke up with her. You probably should remember something. I was like, is this a drunken wake up?
I like to even be remotely familiar with somebody I'm naked with in a room.
There's lots of water there's reasons for the water running and things like that. But when you're not giving any context, it's just dumb. Like, why is that happening?
Saying, who are you? Yeah. Who are you? You get the answer, I am you.
Which is, again, what?
Apparently, in my research with the book, this makes sense within the context of the book, but not quite it. And then he turns her over, and it's like a corpse. It's that whole reveal where you see a few times, and then he falls out the window and rah, like everything.
Yeah, it's always the scare that scares them into their accident. So he falls out a window into poolside.
Yeah, he doesn't hit the pool, but like through a glass ceiling. Like, it's a high rise.
Yeah.
He's not going to live.
No.
And I have to admit, I'm pretty impressed with the fact that we got like a flapping penis in the wind shot for a 1981 movie.
Well, there's a lot of nudity in this movie.
A lot of nudity, but full frontal male nudity. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, okay.
I was actually surprised we didn't get a little bit more. And the guy who plays the guy falling out the window is he also plays his own brother.
Yes.
And they do a pretty good job.
I have one note. It's too okay. hard to tell them apart. And part of the reason is he has a mark on his arm. And they put it on both twin guys.
Oh, now, Jesus.
What you can do so that I can fucking discern, get rid of it or make up it over. And then maybe I can track who's who.
The brother, the one that fell out the window, had the slick back hair and the porn stash.
Yes. Yeah, that doesn't help. That significantly does not help.
No.
Especially when you get into the flashback.
Get into the whole movie, it took me a long time to figure out there were twin brothers involved.
I love this actor's reactions to things. They are just baffling sometimes. He'll be looking at somebody who's talking to them with sheer panic on his face.
Yes.
And I think it's mainly because how am I in this fucking movie?
I think he's just sitting there going like, who am I? Like, he's probably just really upset. I'm getting no direction here. So this is what I'm doing.
He has the most priceless reactions. And if this was a video podcast, I'd give you a clip. But it's not. So you'll have to go look at it on your own.
Yeah, but we get no explanation on the going out the window. You only really find out, I think, about the corpse later. I gave the reveal too fast, but... fuck, that's what the movie should have done. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to run a trailer and hopefully you'll get the gist of this movie where we had to sit through 2 hours of it.
I will take you places where you have never been.
For the start.
I will show you things that you have never seen.
Beginning.
And I will see the life run out of you.
Dark night, in this peaceful New England village, something happened. Something too terrifying to remember. Something too frightening to forget. Something that has remained a secret until now.
Is anyone else seeing things? Am I the only one having nightmares?
Universal Pictures presents Fred Astaire, Melvin Douglas, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., John Houseman, Ghost Story, from the terrifying best-selling novel by Peter Straub.
Who is this?
He's found a picture of her.
That's not possible.
The girl, the men, the evil, the silence.
Dad, I'm telling you, something happened. I'm telling you something. I think he may have been murdered.
The house, the fear, the nightmare, the vengeance, the terror, the truth.
Not now, Rick. Yes. Now. Something's happening. Something terrible. I fear that more of us are going to die.
No, we must talk about it.
She is not the person you think she is.
Who are you?
Oh, no, please, let's not stop.
She's worried you have the wrong idea about her.
Everything about her is wrong.
No, please. Please, let me talk about her.
Get away from her, Dave.
What are you?
She's dangerous.
Listen to me, please.
Soon they will learn that they have never been forgiven. Ghost Story. The time has come to tell the tale.
Okay, yeah, something was happening. That's how I felt when I was watching this movie. Something's happening. Somebody explain to me what that is. Something is. That would be
no
awesome.
Idea. Like, you talk slow burn movies. This one was like, I don't know, something that got started about 10 years ago and you had to wait.
Is that some the children learning to start a fire with rocks and sticks?
Yes.
And blowing on it, but somebody forgot to blow on it.
Yep.
But there is an ember of a good idea here.
For sure.
And So I'm trying to figure out where to start here. Okay, Don goes back to home. He doesn't really want to go back home.
No, but his brother's
for his
dead.
Brother's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have the best relationship with his father, who is...
Douglas Fairbanks.
Thank you. Which is Edward Wanderley. And that was another major problem with this movie, trying to figure out who was who character-wise.
Yeah.
Like, I was a good hour in when I started going, okay, that's this person, that's this person.
And only because half of them are dead?
Yeah. When they start going, oh, and... Okay. During the flashback near the end of the movie, when we start seeing their younger selves...
Couldn't tell who was who.
I couldn't tell who was who, especially when you got somebody like John Houseman who's got a distinct voice and then you don't give it to his character. And then they kept calling somebody Ned.
Which is Ed.
Which is Ed, because there is no Ned.
No.
I'm like, did you guys suddenly forget your own characters' names? What the fuck is going on?
I know.
Just when I thought I knew what was going on, then they threw that at me. Who the fuck is Ned?
Yeah. Like, I know stylistically wanted to be realistic, because we don't use people's names all the time when we talk to them, but when you're writing a movie, you fucking need to do that.
And if you're not going to tell me who the guys are until, like, halfway through the movie, and then tell me a different name for them, fuck you.
I know.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, keeping track of characters should not be a torturous thing.
Dad hasn't got the best relationship with his son, thinks he's a bit of a fuck-up, and during the most awkward dinner on the planet, he says, oh yeah, I slept with that girl, his fiancée, too.
Yeah.
The only time we actually find out that this person was even remotely going to get married or whatever, and he couldn't even remember her name.
No.
I assume that was, if in that establishing shot of him dying, that would have been the fiance in the face down in the bed, maybe?
That's what I'm guessing.
I think that...
And the fiance thing confused me in the flashback.
I can see how it would have.
Oh, yeah.
But if you go back, like, in the flashback, and we're getting sort of jumping ahead of ourselves.
That's okay. I think we need to jump around on this movie.
Yeah. Is Don, who's the living brother, calls David and talks to him about how... She's not who she says she is. She's not real. I think that's where the dialogue from the beginning of the movie comes from. Is his brother had warned him, and now he's seeing the other side of Alma, and now he's going, "Who are you? What are you?" Right. But again, context. Right.
Yeah.
You get your clues 3/4 of the way through the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don kind of wants to join in on the Chowder Society because he needs to tell the story about. This girl who wound up being his brother's fiance was also his own at one point. They had a relationship. He's a teacher. She was also at the school as a teacher.
Yeah, she worked in the admin office.
And she's Alma. Alma?
Alma.
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 Yeah.
Neat name. Alma. And
that's why I can remember that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such an
old... Her name was distinctive.
It's such an old school name. I kind of like Alma. It.
Yeah, I know.
It's like it's what your grandma's name would be.
I think it would be making a comeback now. Their old names are coming back.
Yeah, maybe. So they strike up a relationship, and they have a whole relationship.
Yeah.
And
based solely on sex, really.
Which almost kills his career.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's out having fun with her. It does kill his career.
Okay, yeah. Does he get fired?
Yeah.
Okay,
They're doing a lot of fucking.
I got bored. I didn't care about his career at the end. Yeah, they were spending a lot of time.
There's a lot of fucking going on. And, you know, she's having fun. But every now and again, like, as the relationship gets more serious, and, you know...
She has these weird moments.
She has these weird moments where she just zombies out and says the weirdest shit.
I know.
All makes sense in context once you hear the second flashback.
Yeah. Right? And it seemed... I thought he was trying to justify it by saying she was sleepwalking at one point, because I couldn't figure out what
that's what
going
I was
on.
Wondering, but they never actually went there. And, you know, as she got weirder and weirder... You know, when she slipped when they were in the bathtub together and she slips under the water and then
screams.
He pulls her by her feet, playfully.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he lets go right away, but she just stays there.
I know, right?
Yeah. And then she gets out screaming and then stares out windows and
you've never seen I'll Take You Places You've Never Been.
Yeah.
Like
she's either heavily medicated or crazy. And I'd be like, why would you marry this woman?
No, yeah, exactly. I'm like, red flags, red flags.
That's part of the story too, is, yep. is he says, you know what, I don't think I want to get married.
Yep.
At least not right now, maybe not ever. And then that's where cue her disappearance.
Yeah. 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 And that's a bit midway through this movie. I am deliberately going there to structure this conversation in a way that makes more sense than the movie
does. So
that
you'd understand what's going on.
So this is give it a more linear perspective, which may be a little hint into our remake. Yeah. I don't know. We haven't discussed it. We never go into our remake portion of the show having discussed it with each other. So it's always going to be a good time there.
But yeah, like he shows up the next day. Her place is empty. She's disappeared. And then she shows up where his brother is.
And it turns out all these old guys have a connection to her as well, but they're all very secretive with their chowder society. And not once do we ever see them eat soup.
No.
I don't.
Yeah. But not until there's two more deaths.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't forget that Edward...
It takes a while for them to want to talk about it. Although, Ricky seems to have more flashbacks, more willingness to make admissions about their past. Mm-hmm.
And to believe Dawn when he says, there's something not right here. There's something, you're all in danger.
Although his fascination with that house, like, it's not explained for the longest time why he's even going to this dilapidated house.
Where arguably the best character in the movie is seen.
Yeah, two of the best characters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yes. These, the transient and the kid.
Yeah.
Who have been having full-on conversations with this woman. They keep off-screen for as much as possible with voiceover. It's Alice Creek got a very distinctive voice, so you know it's her.
Yes.
And has been talking to these people, and Ghostly Visage or whatever. So it's kind of their boss. They're a little unhinged as well.
They are. And you know what? I honestly think that was the best performance in the whole movie.
I don't remember the kid's name, but the guy's name is Gregory Fanny. Gregory Bale.
I thought it was Finney, and then I thought I heard Fanny. And then I had to go online to find Fenny.
Oh, well, when we find out Alm's other name is Eva, at one point I thought it was Gallo, and then they started calling her Gally, and I'm like, do you guys know her name at all? Because I was sure they said Gallo at the start, and then it turned into Gally.
I know.
And I'm like, I am hoping that's a nickname, because, it's all over the place. Ed, Ned, I'm like, I'm willing to say, hey, you know, I blame the old guy.
Yeah.
But there's four old guys and no direction.
No. I think the only time I really knew who somebody was is like Ricky. Because a couple times he's like, I'm Ricky, and people call him Ricky. And at one point he tells Donald, no, call me Ricky.
And he was of the elder statesmen. He was had the most screen time too.
Yeah. Right? That was Fred Astaire.
He was the central figure of the Chowder Society that was most involved in the goings-on.
Yeah.
And I got to say, Fred Astaire, still a classy in his 80s.
I know.
Yes.
Like, very cool.
But I do say I have a problem with calling an old man Ricky. Like, Richard, Rick.
A guy who gets dressed up in a tuxedo just to have drinks with his friends allows people to call him Ricky.
Yeah.
But he was the most easygoing of the bunch. He was the only one who didn't go into a profession. He was a business owner. He wasn't he wasn't like a lawyer or a doctor or a politician. He was just a guy.
Yeah.
Like, who happened to have these powerful friends.
Yeah, because he knew him. He just happened to be the one who knew them from before they became who they became.
Yeah, he grew up with them, right? And he was supposed to be a lawyer and he changed his mind. Like, they talk about that in the flashback.
Yeah. Well, wasn't he? Who was the poet? One of them was a poet. Who wrote some poetry. I think that was Ricky.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So we go into the flashback and you find out. But what's funny, though, is they go into such detail with the relationship with Donald and then gloss completely over Alma getting engaged to his brother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's spend 45 minutes on this relationship and zero on the next one that's going to explain a few more things.
Yeah. Like, you know,
it's like, I met her a month ago. We're engaged, and that's pretty much the entire.
That's it.
Yeah.
Don't even see them together.
Yeah. The David thing. And never mind the fact that these people, both brothers have had rather long sexual relationships with a dead person.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Somebody who doesn't actually exist. Now, to be fair,
Dawn was telling the whole
story. He wasn't telling David's story. He was telling his story as he experienced it.
Yeah.
So yeah. he couldn't say an awful lot about David and yeah. Alma's relationship.
And they don't even meet in this town. She wants to go back to the town.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's sort of your first clue.
He meets her in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah. California.
Yeah, they're in Florida.
They're in California, aren't they? Florida.
Who cares? Florida? It's not there. It's not Vermont. It's,
yeah, they've got palm trees and tropical plants.
Or not Vermont. Sorry, New England. It is New England.
It is New England?
Millbourne, New England. Sorry. We were all talking.
Which I got confused.
Now the Chowder Society makes more sense.
Yeah. It does, yes.
When they said Millbourne, I thought they said Melbourne, and I'm like, that's in Australia. This is very weird.
Yeah. When they actually said it, I wrote it down because I'm like, oh, this could be important. And making any kind of discovery in this movie is, like, noteworthy because, like, you're piecing together this puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the two gentlemen who do die before the flashback, again, one, they're both, like as Jay said, scares, right?
Yeah.
The one old man, for whatever reason, gets up and wanders out onto that bridge.
Oh, he wanders out on that bridge because he thinks he sees Donald. Yeah. He thinks he's following
his
son.
He was chasing a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Or David, sorry.
Yeah.
Who's the alive one? I thought Donald was alive.
Don's alive. Yeah. David's the dead one.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's...
See, it's confusing.
Yeah, he's chasing his son. A mailman stops or tries to stop him and say hi, and he's very focused on what he sees.
Yeah.
To go to that bridge, and then he gets the makeup scare.
Yeah, which was a stage worse than it was in the first scare.
Yeah, they did make it worse each time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that was just shocked the audiences more so than...
The makeup's good.
Oh, yeah, I would say the makeup is great.
Mm-hmm. When they do have those little scares, they're not scary, but when you see it, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, you're not going to get closer to the thing that's looking like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and then, of course, he falls off the bridge.
Off the bridge, and it's a winter in New England, so falls onto this frozen pond lake thing.
River,
and goes through the ice, or partly through the ice, anyway.
I know, I enjoyed it. I thought that was a good death, like, the way he falls. I'm like, yep, he's not.
It's not a long fall, but it's a hard one.
Oh, yeah.
And he's an old man. I mean, technically, all four gentlemen are supposed to be in their 70s, like around 70.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
right. But yes, certainly they are old men and frail.
Yeah, all these actors were in their 80s when they shot this movie. So
yeah, you have that one, and then the other guy dies with a scare. But he's a doctor.
He had a heart attack. He had a heart condition.
Yeah, he had a heart condition.
He actually died of fright.
What's funny is he says, yeah. I don't see patients anymore, and he's down in like his little office, and I'm like, he's got a fucking amazing stash of drugs.
Yeah, he was having bad dreams. They all were.
They all had bad dreams,
and he wakes up from that dream, and he has those signs of a heart attack. He's clutching his chest, and he tells his wife, Kala.
Well, tried to strangle her.
I think she's...
He wakes up...
His nurse. Yeah. He tries to strangle his nurse.
He wakes up, strangling her. I thought it was his wife, but maybe it's his nurse.
I'm not sure. It
she
was very fuzzy.
She seemed a lot younger than him.
Significantly, yeah.
Yeah, and they're all having bad dreams. What's funny, like, Ricky's wife is always like, you're having another bad dream, like...
Yeah, so, but, you know, she doesn't die, but he wakes up strangling her and
doesn't remember in the morning.
Remember in the morning, and...
He thinks he's strangling.
Yeah, and it could be a heart attack or a panic attack, but while she's calling for an ambulance, he goes to his medicine cabinet to...
Get something.
I assume that maybe he has a pre-existing condition.
And again, a big medicine. He's got to sort through a lot of stuff. He's got a lot of stuff there.
And he's got a good stash going.
I know. My God. Like, I'm kind of wondering, like, is he an addict? Is that what's happening now?
Oh, maybe he's still working. I don't know.
There's a line. I don't see patients anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he just kept the drugs and...
Hell yeah.
There's a sign right there. And there is another scare, with the... rotting face woman.
But the nurse lady, she sees her too. She's like, there's somebody here.
Yes, because Eva can appear to anybody.
Yeah, she's not really restricted. She exists independent mostly.
Yeah, so the guest isn't there. He gets the scare, and they find him had gone through the cabinets and the glass cabinet around the drugs. Mm-hmm. So we assume it was a heart attack.
Yeah, well, and they do talk about his pre-existing heart condition.
Yeah.
In the scene prior to that, when she kicks them all out because he's...
Yeah, because you're getting them all worked up,
It's not good for his heart.
And, yeah. And then then after that, we kind of go rolling back into like that 45-minute flashback. That's a long, a flashback like that is just too long.
Yeah.
The flashback was too long, and the nightmare scenes where they're having the nightmares, there were too many of them and they were too long.
Yeah.
Right? Did you like the old timey talk sometimes when they're talking about, you know, getting them worked up? What did she call it? The Jim Jams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
No, I love that. And that's why my remake's set in the same time. So you can have that carry over the language and the manners and sense of propriety that the older gentlemen will have.
Yeah.
I really liked that about the movie, was that sense of propriety.
Yeah. Well, in this ageless town, you know, it hasn't really changed in all that time. And even now, that wouldn't exist anymore, cell phones and all that stuff. So, you know, I'd probably keep it in the 80s as well.
For sure, yeah. It gives it more... The immediacy is not what you need. You kind of want to keep them a little isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and get to the story itself. Because it is a ghost story. I mean, that's the bottom line. That's what it is. I don't think it was supposed to be a horror film in the sense that we know of horror films as they are now. I think in 1981, this few scares that there are probably would have been quite shocking to theater audiences.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with the few makeup scenes they have are really good. Like the rot, they're always a little different, but it's, you know, pieces, part of her face rotted or gone, skeletal.
It's always progressively worse.
Well, I think this is like, I remember older films, they relied, because they didn't have a lot of the technology, they relied on more on what your brain could do and what they didn't show you. And the 80s sort of was the beginning of where they were showing you everything, every dirty, gory.
Yeah, a lot of the ghosty stuff is just kind of off-screen voice.
Yes, right. Yeah, and I think that it was supposed to be chilling rather than horrifying.
Yes. Right?
Get your skin crawling. And again, in the early 80s, and I think that you're right, this is part of that transition from scare you by making you think about it to scare you by showing you it. And it may not have worked as well as it could have.
Yeah.
But then after the flashback, we get another flashback.
Yeah.
There's this whole movie's flashback.
I know. And it's like you spend so much time in these flashbacks, and then you flashback, and then you're not sure who anybody is, because you physically cannot get younger versions of the actors you have. You have to have somebody else, which is why names are so important when you're doing a flashback.
And casting so you can get as close as you can, because one of the guys that they cast in the flashback was a dead ringer for Fred Astaire.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, there we go. There's Ricky.
And then it's not Ricky.
And then it was the doctor. I'm like, really?
I was with you. That's what I had, that exact same confusion. I'm like going, but Ricky seems so nice, and this guy's kind of a dick. That's because it was a different guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so they could have cast to at least facial structure. And the guy they cast as Edward was actually well cast. He did look like he could have been a younger...
Was that the Edward... Ned Edward, the guy who was the father?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to say, very dashing. I was like looking at the young him, and I'm like, I get it. Yeah, I don't see it.
But that was well cast.
Yeah, that was the only one that was well cast.
I think that's the only reason I knew it was who it was.
Yeah. Because, yeah, the guy they cast as Sears didn't even remotely resemble
John
Houseman. It didn't sound like him.
Accents weren't even the same.
No. If it hadn't been for the fact that Sears was such a dick as a young man, I wouldn't have known who it was.
Yeah.
But again, with the Ricky face, you're still confused
halfway
through.
Yeah, well, should we just do the reveal since we're talking about that flashback?
Yeah, I don't think we need to go through this movie scene by scene because it doesn't bear it.
Hell no.
No. Okay, so basically these guys meet this woman, Eva, all at the same time, the group together.
It was in church or something like that, wasn't it?
No, I thought it was just like a symphony
concert.
Yeah,
that's what it was, concert,
like
yes.
A function of some sort.
Because there's a string quartet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... Oh, God, was it a party of some sort, too? Because some people
There goes to a party afterwards. They first go out to some place to have ice cream. She's having ice cream with all of them.
I was like, oh, maybe this was a little later on.
And then the party's later on.
Okay, yeah, because at that party, there was this dude dressed in a girl's dress, but another person is in
it's
kind
fancy
of
dress.
Formal
yeah,
wear.
It was a Halloween party.
It was a costume party.
I got the feeling it was the kind of party where you invite some people and tell them it's formal, and then you invite some people and tell them it's a costume party, and you invite another chunk of people and tell them it's cross-dressing. Like, it was somebody's idea of a joke.
No, I think that was just a costume party. I think that legit, a guy dressed as a woman was a legitimate costume for a period of time.
Yeah, I was just... baffled at what kind of function this was. It felt like everybody went to a different party and just, You know, it all came to this one place. It was I was very confused about that part.
What was Ava dressed as? She was dressed as something. I recognized her being in a costume.
Yeah, she was definitely in a costume. I can't recall. And I was trying to think of why it would be a Halloween party, because it was a summer. They were all home for the summer.
That's what I'm saying. But you can have costume parties. It doesn't have to be Halloween.
Yeah, it was a. I thought it more of a ball.
Yeah.
Anyway, they meet up with her, and they're all quite taken with her, and it's they all kind of falling in love at the same time, and it's, you know, first man to the gate kind of.
It's an odd arrangement of
It
was a little sick.
It's
actually
a bunch of friends.
It's twisted.
My remake takes this much further.
Yeah, no, there's something unhealthy about that relationship.
She's teasing them all.
She is, but she
only actually has Ned. One relationship.
Yeah,
with one
she.
Person.
You can see her. She only has eyes for Ned. She does.
Well, it's because he's beautiful. He's a beautiful
man.
He
is attractive, but I mean, like, it's weird. Like, you know, she's made her choice, but she is toying with the rest of them.
Yeah.
But to be fair, if she only has eyes for him, like, those guys are around a lot, and there's that one point where you can see, like, they're doing chasing each other or something like that. Her and Ned end up down there, and the other guys are going to leave.
Yeah, because
the other guy says, "Come back." I would be like, "What the fuck is going on?"
Yeah,
here?
he actually leaves her there to be with his friends, which made me start thinking that maybe he was playing the wrong team.
I know.
He's the only one who had kids, so
no. See, that gay people can have kids.
Yeah.
As long as they're trying to avoid society's
gay in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah, being gay then wasn't a thing. And he's impotent with her as
well. Yes, he is.
He is too. So
and that was what prompts her death. Oh, well, what we assume was her death.
But the guy studying to be a doctor was not very good at the beginning, apparently.
Well,
he says she's dead.
Yeah.
Obviously,
he's
a shitty doctor, not getting any grades because he says she's dead, so they're freaked out and do the whole we don't want to go to jail kind of thing and fake an accident.
They do the whole they do that whole thing that makes you hate people,
so
where they're like, well, what's the use of ruining all our lives just because we killed someone?
And so they plop her body into a car and then drive it into the lake.
Yeah.
Or the river or whatever the fuck that pond thing was. It wasn't very big.
It was a pond. It's a pond.
And as the car is sinking, she starts stirring. She's not dead.
And they do try, or actually at least Ned does try to go get her.
He does. He makes an attempt, but it's not.
And as we've seen on Mythbusters, it's hard to get out of a sinking car.
It is. It is. You've got pressure. Basically, everything I've ever seen is you have to make sure that it gets flooded with water before you can even get out of it.
Yeah. So, they murdered her.
Yeah.
They went from accidental murder.
Twice.
Yeah.
They thought they murdered her once. Decided to get rid of the body.
Well,
then murder her again.
It was she was starting to make some... There was a fight happening. She was starting to get overly sexual with some of the other friends because they were having an argument.
She
was going to reveal the impotency thing. And he just pushes her, but she hits her head hard.
Understand part of that, because here's the thing. I'm watching this whole thing happen and Sierra's like, I want my dance. Like, he's being fucking aggressive.
Yeah, he's being a dick.
And Ned's like, well, I think we should go. And I'm like, at some point, I'm like, chick, you let them in your house, bad move. Yeah. I know you think they're
your
friends.
He's being a dick in that 20s way of being a dick.
But, I mean, he says to, go. I'm like going, that's the best idea that's happened this entire time. Why don't you just let this happen? And then she gets all weird.
She starts antagonizing.
I think she was mentally unstable back in the 50s.
Yeah, no, I think she doesn't like being pushed.
Yeah.
At least verbally or anything else. She likes to be the one kind of in charge.
She was also mad at Ned for discussing their sex life or lack of sex life, right?
Well,
although the guys were outside the goddamn window. How fucking creepy was that?
Yes.
Ned was saying,
singing to her while they're supposed to be boning.
Ned was basically saying that they had good sex. He alluded to it because this movie's still trying to be kind of classy. So he basically says, yep, it was good? Yep.
He doesn't
do anything to dissuade their thoughts, but he doesn't go into great detail about anything either. But that seems
to be enough saying
you're talking about the sex life and lying about it. Well, he's not really talking about it, but he doesn't want to admit impotency either.
But here's my next question. they're talking about it. The next idea is for all four of them to go to her house.
I totally have fun with this in my remake because I'm like, she is a bit of a femme fatale, but they never have enough balls to go through with it. You know, it always feels like they're teasing towards that, but they never quite get there.
Yeah, like at least give her some power. Don't do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would totally make her more of a femme fatale.
Yeah, I'd give her more control. I'd make it so that she was antagonistic.
No, don't go, guys.
Yeah, like I'd make it, but I'd also make it where it's more dubious as to who she favors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that them sticking around makes a bit more sense, because like when you say he gets up and goes to his friends, I'm like, yeah, they don't really care about her. They're more in love with each other.
Yeah.
And just can't admit it.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of places to go with this.
Yeah, there really are.
So anyway, flashback to the present after her death, and that spurs some of the motivation of her living ghost. I don't know, because she wants to get back to the town.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why she's not there in the first place.
I know. Why is she so far away?
Yeah, and having relationships with the children.
Well, when I was reading online researching this book, apparently this kind of gives more clarification. What I could glean from it is that it's not just a ghost of a woman. It's like more of a thing that exists, and like and it changes shape, and it's a shapeshifter. It's not the same looking woman all throughout. And it sort of gets its power from like the belief of other people are antagonizing them.
Hmm.
Like I think Ava is like a shape that this thing has chose, but just
so she
wants
was
to kill
never
people.
Human.
I don't think so.
Well, now I'm going to read the book.
That's interesting.
Just to see.
That's sort of what I gained from what I read about it.
Yeah, but yeah, I think that in the movie, I think the motivation is that she wanted to have one of the offspring from one of these men,
mm-hmm.
bring her home so they could see her
as she was.
I think that was her reason for wanting to go back. Is she wanted to torture them. She wanted to punish them.
Yeah, right? A realization I only came to it probably about an hour 30.
Yeah, and it obviously took her a really long time, because she waited any longer, they would have died on their own.
Yeah. Like, and the guys, like, I don't think their son is young. Like, she waited for him to get way old.
Well, yeah. I would think he was...
You don't look that old,
I don't
lady.
Know how old the
maybe
actor
25?
Was, but yeah, she doesn't look very old.
Looks in his 30s.
He looks in his 30s, but considering these guys are in their 80s, I'd say that he probably was supposed to be closer to 40.
Yeah, so why wait so long?
Yeah. Well, I cast a guy in that role in the 50s. I'm like, if you're going to have people that old, I'm going to make sure that it looks
the timeline
legit.
Looks.
So yeah, that's her driving antagonism is to get these people. Either,
and this helps explain the water.
Either through the spirits or these two transients she's manipulating, these creepy cult kids.
Well, she tells them she can give them immortality or something is what the one guy says.
Right. You know, I have no idea what's driving that the Gregory and the kid at all. They're nuts, and they are super creepy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, walking into people's houses and spouting on. And honestly, everybody I think is nuts, because it just feels like nonsense coming out of everybody's mouths 24/7. Like, it's just, they all just talk really strange in this town.
They do. I think that they were trying to capture some of the speech patterns of the 20s. Like, people who grew up in the 20s do speak very differently even than people that were growing up in the 60s and 80s, right? I think that was part of it, too, is they were trying to capture the very proper speech patterns.
True, but I mean, that doesn't explain some of the vagueness of speech.
No, certainly there was some pretty weak dialogue in this movie.
Yeah, like, I mean, I understand trying to keep me, like, in the dark until the final reveal, but you gotta give me a little more than that. Like, to make it that vague, like, what are you? I am you.
Yeah, no, a lot of the dialogue doesn't make sense, and to go as far as deep in this movie...
Oh, yeah, and what I was saying before in the book...
Mine would make more sense if it was that entity.
Yeah, because that's what happens in the book, is in the book, this thing comes back a few more times, and there's always that line, who mm-hmm. are you? I am you.
And so, I mean, her physical body is trapped
in
that car.
Yeah, because it starts, I guess it starts off with, like, one of the brothers in a car with a 10-year-old girl. That she's fine, but he looks like he might kill her. Like, apparently that's how the book, that book ends the book. So, but it's the same entity. It can't be Alma. So I think that's the thing. It's a thing. It's not a...
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure with that. Sounds like the book doesn't make any sense either.
I'll let you know.
Well, it's Stephen King-ish if it's a thing that's doing stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Imagine all his faces entities.
Peter Straub is known for using that type of archetype.
Yeah. Right,
so...
Well, interesting. Oh, do you guys have anything more to say of this, or you just want to jump into the remake? Don't know if there's much to say more about the backstories. God knows there's more of it, but it doesn't matter.
Not really, no. Yeah. I mean, there's the ending, which is actually probably the best part of the movie, because it was over, but for those of you who didn't like it. But it was also... showed the strength of Ricky, who was supposedly the weakest of the characters.
Yeah, yeah, he gets them to dredge out the car. I mean, and this implicates him right away. Yeah. But, I mean, at that point, you don't have much life left anyway.
Well, he was... I think it shows, like, it's sort of... the strength wasn't what they were. It's more like he had more of the strength of character.
Yeah.
I think that's what they've done.
Yeah. Exactly. And I liked that dichotomy of and that change in his character, where he was represented as being the pushover, the one that's... everybody sort of just walked all
picks
over.
On and walks over.
He was the least successful of the bunch, but he was the only one who had the balls.
The moral fiber to
say, you know what, enough's enough.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The only one to survive.
Yeah. So Ricky and Don revisit that house, and Don gets injured and can't walk. And that's when...
Sears.
Well,
Sears leaves the house to go get help, and that results in a car accident.
Because Fenny is in the car.
Yeah.
No.
It's a snowplow.
Snowplow.
He's seeing more visages of Ava distracting him, and he manages to miss the plow, but drives into a snowbank.
And then he's attacked by Fenny from the
back of the car, the kid. And that's when he dies.
Mm-hmm. And Ricky kind of figures out, well, he should have been back by now, so he's not coming back.
My turn to leave.
Yeah.
I'll be right back. And he closes the door, making it his Don's more isolation that much weirder. And like, yeah. Oh, let's just close these off, because that's what we do.
Yeah. What I do really like about this movie is the fact that they didn't make the guy you thought was going to be the hero.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. In the end, it ultimately ends up being Ricky.
Ricky. Yeah.
Yep.
And by his actions of getting the car out and pulling the corpse out of it, which just disintegrates and melts away from what little flesh. I mean, it's just this
it
corpse
gets
has
up and comes out.
Yeah. It kind of gets up out of the car, and then what little flesh just kind of bloops off like the blob. Yeah. It's really cool. It's really cool.
Yeah, it was actually really cool.
Yeah, it did look like a corpse that's been underwater for a very long time.
Yes, it did. Yes. Now, we did forget to mention that Ricky is picked up by...
Yes, by one of the transient guys, the crazy guy.
Gregory Bates or Gates or whatever the name was, but... Gales?
Bale.
Okay, I knew something like that. It's written down, I just can't remember. But Ricky ends up killing him, right? I mean, that's it.
That's right. There was the struggle.
There was a struggle.
Yeah, Ricky takes out a knife... Because Ricky thinks ahead, which I kind of liked. He's like, I'm just going to have this.
Well, they've been knocking people getting knocked off this whole movie.
Yeah, but the guy threatens him because he says, oh, I'm going to kill you because Ava's going to do me a favor. So he ends up stabbing the guy. They get into a car accident. FYI, those cars are built, man. And so I'm guessing like he stabs him, the other guy dies. So Ricky manages to get out a few minutes later.
Yeah, so as a result of pulling out the corpse, Alma, Ava, is her...
Her power's gone.
Yeah, her power's gone. She's getting closer and closer to Dawn in that creepy way.
Mm-hmm.
And he throws his flashlight through her. And yeah, that saves him. Now he's just injured in a house alone.
Yep.
Hopefully somebody remembered to go get him.
Couldn't get up before.
The movie ends.
But got up once she's gone. Because he gets up the stairs partway. I'm like, dude, you could have just done that.
Yeah, well, they did do this. They did build him a splint and stuff, but...
But yeah, that really was the end of the movie.
Yeah. Hour 50 of not a lot of much of anything.
Yeah, over an hour 50, I think, isn't it?
It was an hour and 49
Mike,
minutes, actually.
Yeah. It was just an hour 50.
Okay, my brain's just tacking on more time because it feels
as
like...
As was Jay, he was just saying longer than a movie that was 2.5 hours.
I kept pausing and stopping, and so I made it even longer for myself. And then after I finished, I went for a walk. Because I'm like, oh, God, I need to clear this out of my brain.
Yeah, this has got to be tightened in some way.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of opportunities to tighten it up and to make it a little more interesting.
And we're going to do that right now.
Yes. Yes.
Starting with fantasy casting. I got to this kind of late, so it's still a little loosey-goosey in my brain, but I've got a lot of names written down because casting old. I like the fact that the cast was older actors and this thing that's haunted them throughout this time. So I wanted that to kind of carry over in the remake and have our generations of classic actors in those parts. I still like that aspect of it, and then maybe keep it to the 80s so you still have that classic aspect of the story. I wouldn't do as many flashbacks. I would maybe tell this a wee bit more linearly and have their story with Ava seeded throughout the movie.
Yes.
Elements of their relationship with her.
I would make it to where it's not so much, it's not this four guys and one chick type of deal.
Yeah.
I would make it separate encounters. But that's just the way I do it. Make her a different creature with every guy. Make her a different person.
Well, I guess it depends on how close you go into the novel. Because, I'm going in this with what I knew from the movie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, reading it as the movie rather than...
Yeah, I had no prior knowledge of the novel until you started reciting this to me. So those elements don't exist in my brain. So, I mean, what you might have in mind for a remake is going to be completely different than what we think. Which is cool, and I want you to walk us through that as well, and maybe we can come up with something together.
Oh, for sure.
So, yeah, where I was thinking, let's take the elements of this movie.
The
few that do work. If knowing this manipulative creature that she is, at least what Trish has been telling us, it kind of feeds a little bit towards... I want her to be a bit more femme fatale.
Yes.
She does manipulate men. She likes the attention of men. Was playing to all of them.
Yeah, I think that's what was one of the big flaws is she chose one of them.
Yeah,
but they're all still very interested in her.
Yeah,
so I think that those nightmare sequences that we all like so much use those to instead of having them like a brief snippet showing they're having a nightmare and then having sort of a memory of her as your flashback without having so have their dreams sort of. Yeah. Tell you the story, right?
Yeah, and that's where you can have, because this is something that haunts them, you can have little snippets of their memories of her that turn nightmarish.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Like, they can think they're starting off in a really nice dream at a really good point in their lives, and then it just turns.
It's part of their memories that turn nightmarish, and that also could be her haunting them physically in the now as manipulating their memories in their dreams.
Well, exactly, would be great. Right?
It could be something simple as just like seeing that car just before it goes into the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that still plays to the gothic tone of this film.
It totally does.
And true, like what you could also do is like when we're keeping the age of the guys, I love that idea, like to being like maybe an old man and like maybe thinking maybe you're losing your grip on reality a bit, like you're getting on, am I getting dementia?
And I think the doctor was kind of questioning that in the original movie, but it wasn't conveyed all that well.
Yeah. There's always these little hints of ideas that they never go further away.
Because they didn't have time because the movie was already 2 hours long.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but of nothing, though. Yeah. It was the weirdest thing. Like, they have the time to do it. They just weren't utilizing it properly.
Yeah.
You know,
they could have utilized the time.
I get the feeling. I mean, she's naked through most of the movie, but yet, and I feel like she's supposed to be femme fatale, but not because she's monogamous all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get that. Yeah. I can only seduce one guy at a time. She's not a multitasker.
It was baffling to me. You know, I would have had this weird... I wouldn't have done it on screen, but I would have hinted at the fact that that scene in the park in the 20s, let's make that a shocking sex thing that would have been really shocking in the 20s. Like, hello, boys.
See, and I
would have sex in the park.
I wasn't thinking about the park. I was thinking more about like that thing at her house. Like, see that being like a dark thing and it went wrong.
I think she should have been having little affairs with each of them.
For sure. Yeah,
and not being overly like everybody each aware of it was going on.
No, I think she should have the whole thing where you're my favorite, right?
Yeah, which antagonizes it that much more. Something that is weird but comfortable with them. They're all kind of have this relationship with them. But then there's the, you have the hints of jealousy that stems it. You can have more
relationship between the four men.
A conflict with them, and then that conflict kind of results in their her death, and her death is what rebonds them with, through their own secret.
Yes.
Yes,
that's
exactly right. Yes.
All right, guys, I'm down with this.
we did. Finally, solid motivation.
There we go.
Yeah,
and certainly, yeah, and the flashback. I mean,
and something justifies all the sex.
And the scene with that really long flashback where they Dawn and her relationship can be 10 minutes.
Oh yeah, that's it.
Right. It just we met. We had this relationship. Just enough to establish how strange she really is.
Yeah, you don't have to devolve the sex scene into a porn movie, because
you don't even need the sex scene.
No, you just have you suggest it.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
easily.
I had no problem seeing her naked all the time.
Oh, no,
she's a very gorgeous woman, but if you're gonna do it, you know, have her utilizing that to more of a fact. It just seemed to be there. You know,
like, I don't know. There's only one bit I kind of felt I could go along with it, like, until the scene in the tub gets weird. I like that scene.
Yeah,
like the thought of, like, you know, I don't know, you've been in a tub with somebody.
Yeah, it's something intimate.
You're hanging around, like, yeah, sure, he's gonna play with her boob with his foot. That's gonna happen.
Yeah, no, there was something playful and fun about it.
That was very domestic.
Yeah. Yes,
it was a very domestic scene. I think that was the what made it work so well. And then that transition from being kind of fun loving and playful to sheer terror on her part.
Yeah. Right? I mean, if you're going to use
one of the more powerful scenes in the whole movie,
if you're going to use the water as a metaphor and stuff, use it where it's effective.
Use it wisely.
Use it wisely. Don't just have that tub running
the overflowing
at the
tub at the beginning. Pointless.
No.
But there was, like, a hint.
There's always this scenes of water, but without reason.
Well, there was one. The only time I tweaked on the water was the scene when they're in the bathroom together and they've locked the door. There's that chick knocking on the door, and there's just a sink just filled with water for no reason.
Yeah, again, there's always water in the scene without a lot of reason for it. Now, if you use that to facilitate her ghostly appearances.
Yes, go very Japanese with it.
That is a very J-horror thing to do, of visual cues before the creepiness happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I'd insert something with a swimming pool at some point. I don't know why.
Swimming pools are cool.
Yeah, and plus you can, like, just have, like, where somebody just thinks they see a snippet of something in the water and it's not there, because that was always scared me about swimming pools. I always imagined there was something in the bottom when I was little. I don't know why. But yeah, but the fact that it bonds them together also gives, like, the motivation for the ghost to be like, really my death is how you guys get back together. I'm pissed off now.
Exactly. And the fact that none of them can leave this town, there's, like, this horrible secret that they share ties them to this town, because it's some of them didn't want to stay there.
No.
Right? I mean, Edward made it very clear that he wanted to be more than just the mayor of this town.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He had aspirations to be president.
Yes, he did. So, but this incident has not just damaged their lives, but it's damaged their futures too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, they never get past it.
No.
No. No. And it's, I don't know, the creepy telling each other creepy ghost stories, it feels kind of antiquated, but at the same time, there's something I like about that.
I like about it, too, as a way of maintaining their relationship and making sure that they're keeping each other secret.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, the regular meetings and it would kind of explain the formality of it all, too.
Yes.
So, okay, I tuned out a couple of times. I was missing this in the original one. So, like, they stayed in that town because of this, but was the reason just because they knew about it, or because there was any sort of guilt or suspicion on them?
Oh, it's not like it's well developed. I don't think it was out of suspicion. It was unity in their secret. They don't.
So you can't keep a secret out of city limits?
Well, and I think that's a trust issue as well. They're part of it's keeping an eye on each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's no motivation actually shown in the movie, so we can say what it is, whatever we want it to be.
Yeah, because I'm saying they're going, like, this whole secret, like, this is their lives ruined by killing someone. I'm like, it's hard to feel a bit of sympathy for that, but again, it's kind of like, well, they're there.
I mean, yeah, if anything, I would have thought that would have driven them more apart. Why would they want to acknowledge that secret?
I know, right?
By staying there.
I was partially confused by that motivation.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think they said something in the original about how they just weren't able to leave. They tried, they were trying to leave, but they all kept getting drawn back.
If it's like a supernatural type of deal, then I get that.
Yeah, and they did say that same thing about that in the movie. Yeah.
Okay, then I can deal with that.
Yeah, and you know, you could have even more little nods to that. You got to establish that somewhere
for sure.
That what's keeping them there.
Yeah, you definitely need that.
Yeah. You maybe can allude to more deaths. Maybe there's a reason why the rest of them didn't have kids
in that movie.
Maybe because they've already been killed.
Yeah, maybe exactly, it could be like as children. Like, yeah, I know my Tommy fell off the bridge when he was 4 or something like that. He wandered out there for reasons we don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been like knocking off their offspring for years.
Established that she's not just them. She wants to...
Yeah.
Ruin their entire
lives. Like, my wife left town, but she had a heart attack or something.
Yeah.
And they established that Dawn and David's mother died when they were quite young.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I like the J-horror aspect mixed with a gothic tone.
Yes.
Like, that could be really interesting.
It could be very interesting.
Yeah, like, those tones, those elements, they can come together. You just have to... You have to go for it. You can't.
And this does feel like you could have a little bit of The Ring in there with that very gothic ghost story. I think The Ring and the most recently Crimson Peak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have something really interesting there.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think we got motivations. We got the strong elements. Mixing the narrative. Hell, I feel like I need to go on an editing exercise and re-edit this movie in a more interesting way, because you can't go flashback to flashback to flashback.
Yeah.
I remember working with somebody
Or fixing the pieces so they make sense.
Yeah. I remember working on a pilot. Nothing ever happened with it. I'm not going to say the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was brought onto this project as a producer, and I wound up going in fairly heavy on creative as well. Coming up with ideas for what would have been a series, and I even had a script for an episode, and that reworked what the pilot was, and it just wound up being a dream sequence and then a flashback and another dream sequence, and the original script had them back to back to back, and I'm like, we can't do that. Here's, you got to move this one into the first act, move this one into the second act, move this one into the third act. Because you can't have back to back to back.
Oh, it's
confusing and weird.
The only way that works is if the whole premise is that, like Inception. That is the only way that will ever work, is if you acknowledge, okay, this is just going to all be a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, fair enough. No,
And it wound up working to a much better effect. Unfortunately, that nothing ever happened with that. But.
Yeah, no, and I think the reason they did it the way they did in the original is because, I mean, the name of the movie is Ghost Story, and they treated it as a ghost story. So he was telling his story to get into the Chowder Society. And then, of course, they had to reveal their big secret to him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'd start there.
Pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I interrupted.
Screech. I mean, you have.
I'm terrible.
Yeah, you can have some of the establishing stuff, but get to that point quicker, right?
Yeah,
and keep the story short and sweet, so you have more time for the fun stuff.
Oh my god, yeah, you can creep out people and freak them out and scare them a lot more.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other approach, if you're going to call it ghost story, is treat it as an anthology and then link it all up to the end, but. And in a way, that's kind of what this was.
The novelization's more of what that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's not like a single entity.
Yeah.
The
elements are all there. It's just structured really poorly. I think we've got something that makes a lot more sense now. So, moving on.
Okay.
Somebody's knocking on my wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move into fantasy casting.
Okay, are you looking at me first?
Yeah.
Okay, so
mine's a bit fluid.
Okay, so I've kind of cast everybody. I basically went to Wikipedia, and anybody who got a credit there got cast.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with Ricky because he was my favorite character in the whole show. So I cast Alan Alda as Ricky.
Oh, nice.
Ooh, good choice.
That is a brilliant choice.
And then I also cast their alternate eagles, or alter egos, or their younger versions. And so for his younger version, I cast a young actor named Nat Wolff. I don't know if he can act or not, but he looked enough like a young Alan Alda for me to go, yeah, that works.
Okay.
And that really was my basis for most of the younger cast.
So
for the doctor, John Jaffrey, the one who was sort of the sickly one, I cast Alan Arkin because I thought he could pull off that sort of sickly, weakening mind character.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know who Craig Roberts really was, but again, he looked enough like a young Alan Arkin for me to go ahead, okay, yeah, we'll give a shot. And I do look at their film histories and going, well, they've done quite a number of stuff that I've seen. I just don't recognize them as actors. For Edward Wanderley, I went a little bit younger just because I really wanted the really classically handsome man, so I went with Richard Gere. So
nice.
He's not that much younger, but...
Okay.
He came through, but I didn't go there.
Yeah. And then I cast Logan Lerman as the young Richard Gere, again, the sort of classically handsome guy.
Nice.
And then for Sears James, this is my favorite casting. I cast Donald Sutherland because he's got the voice. He's got the look. Oh,
there we go.
See, that's funny. I have Donald Sutherland in my movie, just in a different role. Yeah.
Nice.
How can you not go with Donald Sutherland for class, for playing somebody with class, right? I mean, yeah. he just
for sure.
really is class. And then I cast Nicholas Holt as a young Donald Sutherland because he's got that same blue-eyed, good look to him, so I thought that he'd be really well cast.
Nicholas Holt, he's awesome.
Yes, he is an excellent actor. For Don and David Wanderley, I cast Ben Foster. Might be a little on the young side, but I thought he'd be a good...
Yeah, no, I think Ben Foster would be fine. And I think when you're looking at, like we say, we thought maybe the son was too old, so going a little younger is probably a great idea.
And in the original movie, they did talk about how most of them didn't get married until they were in their... like late 30s or 40s. So they were having their children at a late age too. That makes sense.
I don't think that's overly important in that casting that character.
Yeah,
though.
Exactly. So for Eva/Alma, I was going sort of for a woman who has a similar ethereal look to Alice Creed.
Yeah, I know.
It was tough. I found some British actresses, but I'm like, I don't know who you are, right? I'm like, you're really pretty and you look like you could like have that same sort of feel on screen, but can you act? So I went with Amelia Clark because I know she can act, and she has that look.
Mm-hmm.
I try to stay away from hot actors because everybody's looking at hot actors.
Yeah, I had trouble finding that femme fatale in their 40s, you know,
yeah,
the 30-40 range.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I was looking younger because
I have to, like, I have a lot of alternates in my list because I wasn't sure where I wanted them, so, and some of them may get bumped entirely, so.
Yeah, and that's the best part about doing this type of thing. So I also cast Ricky's wife, Stella. I cast Kathleen Turner because she has that same kind of scratchy voice.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, his wife.
I didn't cast any of the wives. They were barely there. So.
I'd still like to see some of them.
Yeah. Millie was a really important character. So I went with Kathy Bates because she's just a little bit younger than the rest of the cast, but she can certainly play that nurse-ish caretaker role.
Mm-hmm.
For Gregory Bale, I went with Casey Affleck. I thought he could pull off that sort of crazy...
He could totally do it.
Yeah. And then I also cast the sheriff because he actually did have a bit of a role. And because I wanted to cast Stephen Dorff in something. So Stephen Dorff is going to be my sheriff.
Sweet.
Nice.
I like that.
And then I did cast a director as well, just because it was fun. I had no real idea. But as we talk about how we'd like to remake it, I think he'd have a real blast with it. I cast Kevin Smith.
No.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's in his wheelhouse, but yeah.
I don't know. He did Tusk.
Yeah,
he can do. He does like humor with like evil, terrible crap. So
I thought he'd have a lot of fun doing something like this. So I'm like, yeah, let's give him a chance.
I mean, I got a lot of faith in Kevin, but I'm not sure it's up his wheelhouse. But maybe that's why it would work because it's so different from where he would normally go.
Exactly.
So. Oh yeah.
Now, when I was talking about it or looking at it, I mean, for director, actually, I was looking at Neil Marshall.
Oh.
Who's dipped his toe into gothic horror, but, you know, and has done stuff like that. And he's gone on to non-horror movies and a good career as well. And I feel like he could push this in a similar direction that Guillermo del Toro might take while maybe embracing some horror aspects from another country as well. Maybe some of the J-horror elements that we were talking about that would work really well in this movie. Although I should have been probably looking at some Japanese directors too.
Yeah, and I didn't really do that. I sort of was looking for something young and fresh, something to take it in a different direction.
Takahashi Miike would be pretty good too.
Mm.
Yeah. So when I was casting the roles, some, like I said, some are malleable, but John Houseman was the one I kind of concentrated on first because he stands out with that voice and everything else. So I went with Christopher Plummer in that role.
Nice.
he even when he covers up his accent, it still has those aspects to his voice. So that kind of worked for me. And just to show you, when we go through this list as well, it shows you how many great elder statesman actors we still have in the business.
Oh, yeah.
For Ed Wanderley, I had Donald Sutherland, only because I wanted Kiefer to play his son.
I almost went that direction.
That's amazing.
Because I love it when actors bring in their true life sons, because they do look alike and everything else. So that's believable. So I wanted Kiefer Sutherland as Don / David.
Yep.
So that worked for me. But that also puts him, his son, in early pushing 50 category. I mean, Kiefer can sell a little younger, but I think he's in his mid-50s right now.
Yeah, he's not young anymore.
No, he's not young anymore. And then the other two, I had I honestly didn't know who for what. For Fred Astaire's character, Ricky, I had a bunch of different names, but I think I settled on Warren Beatty.
Nice.
You know, which actually makes him the oldest man in my cast. Or no, he's 79, so not the oldest one in my cast. Christopher Plummer would be at 83. And Donald's 80. I always thought he was older, but...
Wow.
He's holding on pretty good. And then that final role of John Jaffrey, I honestly wasn't sure who I wanted. I have this long list of people that all of who would be wonderful in this film. I had Michael Douglas, but he's 71, so I'm not sure he's old enough. I had Harrison Ford at one point on my list, because let's embrace the fact that he's old, people. Let's just get this out of the way.
He's old.
And you keep wanting him to revisit his action movies. I swear to God, Hollywood is bound and determined to kill his ass. You know, in his 70s, he has done... what's that Stallone action franchise?
Expendables?
Expendables, yeah. So he's in Expendables 3. And he's been in a Star Wars movie. And they want him to do another fucking Indiana Jones.
And he's shooting a Blade Runner right
now. He's shooting Blade Runner right now. Which means he's not a replicant.
No.
Fuck! Stop it! Let's just embrace the fact that he looks like your grandpa.
Yeah.
Okay? He does. Sorry, he does. Anyway, who else did I have on my list? I had Clint Eastwood on my list. I had Morgan Freeman on my list. I had Burt Reynolds on my list.
I had a few.
Yeah. I stayed away from Morgan Freeman simply because I wanted to stay in time with the era. And unfortunately, and I hate to say it, but young men of this stature would not be friends with a black man. That was the only reason I didn't.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to say that Ricky would be the guy that would be, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's true.
They would have said, we'll just blame the black guy and we'll just go on with our lives and it would be a different movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's unfortunate that...
But I don't want Morgan Freeman, because the only guy I hadn't cast dies really early in the film. And you don't want to do that to the black guy.
No.
But... just so many wonderful elder statesmen. And I could have kept going and going and going. So, yeah, casting this...
It was tough. It was a
hard cast.
You know, and
it was so much fun.
I've come bit of stuff.
And I agree with everything that you said, too. Like, Alan Alda didn't even occur to me, but what a wonderful person to put in this movie. So, yeah. I mean, there's plenty of people you can pick to cast this film. The femme fatale, I had two people in mind. One was... fairly young, I don't think she's even 30 yet, probably close, and then the other one's in her 40s, but I've used Ava Green a lot.
She was the femme fatale of Dame to Kill For.
Yeah, she's played that role a lot.
Yeah,
so she might be a little fucking sick of it. Yeah, she might be a little sick of playing that part, but she's so good at it. Mm-hmm. So she is on the list. The other one's a relatively newer actress, was Mallory Jansen. And not a lot of people know her. She's got some TV cred. Most recently, I've seen her on a show called Gallivant, which is wonderful. It's this period musical piece. And
I've heard of it.
Funny as fuck. Anybody who hasn't seen Gallivant, it usually airs around Christmas time as a short-run show on ABC.
I've heard of it.
Hilarious. All the music's done by, old Disney guys.
Oh, cool.
So, from that Little Mermaid era.
Oh.
But... there's songs about like
Little Mermaid, Lion King,
but the songs are great. It's like it's things like You Disgust Me, and go on YouTube, they're amazing.
Sweet.
And check out some of the songs from that. But she's also got a really great look. I don't know if she'd do any of the nudity that this movie seems to have a shit ton of.
Well,
but
we don't need it in our remake.
It doesn't require. Yeah. Anyway. And people might say, okay, well, you're just doing this because you don't want to cast Olivia Wilde. Yeah, okay, that's true. She looks like Olivia Wilde. I'm going to admit it. So she is basically me saying I want Olivia Wilde in this movie, but I don't want to say it's Olivia Wilde because I use her a lot.
That's what I was about to say. I'm like going, I was going to go. I'm like, she's our go-to, and I got to get away from that.
I'm like, if I had to cast a movie with sisters, I'd do her and Olivia Wilde.
Nice. Cool.
So yeah, but she hails from Australia, so, and she does a good, pretty good British, so,
for sure.
Well, and Alex Creed is from South Africa, so it's not
she is South
yeah,
African.
They all have those interesting accents. I think she'd be interesting in that part as well. But she's skews young, but maybe that would work to her character.
Well, and I was thinking that based on she was in the original movie, she was obviously a little bit older than the boys.
Yeah,
and they were around 20. They said. So I went with, I was looking for actors around that 25, 26 age,
right,
just to be consistent with.
Yeah, so she might fit. She might work.
All right. So I did what I could with it because I was trying to find old guys. In fact, I just kind of went with a cast of like guys I knew that were older and just like try and cast around that and be like, oh, one of them can be the good guy. But I ended up settling on for my favorite actor to be the good guy because I like him the best. So I thought Bill Nighy.
Nice.
I want him to be Ricky. I love him.
Although
I love him so much.
I'd maybe make him Sears, but yeah.
Yeah, but I can see him being just a kindly
I'd like to
gentleman.
See him. Yeah, I'd like to see him in a nice man role for a while, for a change.
I know.
Because he usually plays his heavy villainous characters.
But when he does play good, you're just like, oh, I just want to, oh, you're so wonderful.
Yeah.
I just love him so much. And as young him, we'll put Nicholas Holt in there because they've got that same kind of
nice
cheekbone.
I didn't have time to do my young men cast, so
I did it really quickly because I was looking for other this. Now I think for like my bad guy Sears, I went different. Gary Oldman,
very nice.
I went with him, and there's another younger actor called Josh Peck that I think resembles a young Gary Oldman enough that would work. And then I had for, I think it was Ned, I'm trying to remember it, John Voight.
Okay.
And then
I thought about him.
Yep. Because I'm like, you could see how when he was younger, you could get it. Like, he's kind of like dashing. And then I went with Dane DeHaan as young Ned.
Okay. I'm not sure who that is.
He was, in the latest Spider-Man, he was... Green Lantern, but it's not it. The Green Goblin.
Okay.
He was the Green Goblin. And he's like in a new biopic for, Rebel
That's
Without
okay.
a Cause.
Everybody's seen Spider-Man.
And then for like
Amazing
the last
Spider-Man.
Guy, I've got Jeffrey Rush.
Except for Sam.
I've got Jeffrey Rush for my last
guy. Oh, why didn't I think of that? That's
those,
great.
All those actors were on my list, but I was...
Yeah.
It, for his young version, Jesse Eisenberg. Because they do look, they look similar enough, and that would work to be a little bit dickish.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just what girl would want to get into a gangbang with Jesse Eisenberg?
I don't know. Like it's. Just...
I guess if you're some shape changing monster, maybe.
Exactly. But we're casting to make them seem like, hey, I know which one is which.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Yeah.
That's what we're doing. Now, for the femme fatale role, I was thinking, I'm like, she's kind of already played it, so maybe we'll just keep going there. Alicia Vikander.
Very nice.
Because I know she's got the chops to do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then for, like, the director, old boy, I was thinking, he did another movie called Stoker. Which has sort of that gothic-y feel to it.
Okay.
And I think he would do it like Chanwook Park.
Nice. There you go. And that would play towards some of our J-horror elements as well.
For sure.
Yeah.
You could get the visuals you want. Like, it could make... There could be a style to this that would make it very engaging.
I like that choice because, yeah.
And then for, like, I for Crazy Guy, Michael Shannon. I don't have anything for the child.
I didn't cast the those two.
I didn't cast Penny either because Penny had no dialogue, so you can be pretty much anybody. Who's yeah, in there.
And but I had trouble. I don't have anybody for the sons, but I thought of something because I remember our show about The Departed, and I had trouble telling Leonardo DiCaprio and Matt Damon apart. I'm like, just put them in. And then I can be confused all the over again.
As brothers. Yeah.
They have to be twins.
Yeah, we didn't actually say that, you know, I think maybe they should be different people. So.
Yeah, like, I mean, the twin thing doesn't play into the movie. No. Like, if they'd used it, I get it.
They say they're twins.
No.
No.
At no point do they say they're twins.
No.
I mean, if you're going to use twins, make twins a thing that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Or cast real twins.
Yeah, don't use the same guy and have him have the same mark on his arm and not cover one up and leave the one there. Because twins don't have the same birthmarks, FYI.
As a twin, it's true. But I also don't look like my twins. So.
Yeah, twins can be different guys.
That's right.
It is allowed.
Yeah.
It is allowed. Okay, well, I think we got the structures of a good movie. I mean, really, you got to not go half-ass on your establishing elements, push forward on the ideas. It felt like the movie just kept, okay, here's a good idea, let's not develop that any further. We don't have enough balls to push that any further. And, you know, make their relationship a little more shocking. And it'll drive the rest of your plot.
Exactly. And maybe make the town itself, like,
to make everybody super likable. Like, no. Yeah, you can make the town its own character.
Yeah, it really should be.
Yeah. I mean, the town was a really neat-looking small town.
Yeah, a little hamlet.
Yeah. But, you know, it's you don't have to keep... You can do this now. We have better equipment, and you can do more establishing stuff. And, oh, man, I felt like they kept shooting on the shittiest days. Like, it was snowing, and, it was always a lot of weather in the movie.
Yeah, and I think they were trying to set a tone with it, but it just it didn't convey over
not at all.
But see, I miss sometimes that stuff. Like, when you have, like, horror, they usually send them in summer because it's, like, easier to shoot. But, like, I like the tone of, like, a winter, that desolation, that coldness. Like, I just feel that helps with the dark tone.
Oh, sure.
And it gets dark early. Like, why aren't there more winter horror movies? I see it.
Yeah. I had no problem with it being in winter. I mean, you could make the elements a little different as far as their deaths, or, you know,
have it play into it.
Yeah. You can play it up a little bit more. I mean, it felt like their deaths were almost as fragile as the people we were looking at.
Yeah. No. And I think that's a key thing in the remake as well is we got, like, those few brief early shots of your scary monster, right? And then nothing. Lots of blah, 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 blah. Boobs, 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 blah, 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 blah. Boobs, dead again.
Yeah. Play into the horror you are advertising yourself to be.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you can kill off a character, I want to see the results of what that is. They had all this great makeup for her.
The boobs had more characterization than most of the people in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just give people identities. I mean, if you're going to have them talking, have them mean something, for fuck's sakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. I mean, make sure your dialogue moves the story forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe this rated as high as it did on IMDb. It was somewhere around 60% or whatever.
I think there's a lot of people, like myself, see the story because the story is good.
There is a good story, right? Muddled under all the crap.
Yeah, and so I think a lot of people are going, well, it's not necessarily a good movie, but it's a really good story. And the acting, like, everybody's performances are excellent, right? Like, there's
no.
Ricky was great.
Had their scripts on cardboard and just decided to just talk like that.
Ricky was awesome.
No, I thought the performances were horrible, except for Fred Astaire, who, you know, I felt like people had bad scripts and then
I don't really blame the performances themselves on the acting. The sons, yes.
Yeah,
I blame that completely on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think for part of it, with some of this, it was the actors are working with a script where they don't have any context and they're just doing the best they can with what they've got.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what I blame that on.
Yeah, I mean, the older guys, I felt like they, in a way, their performances conveyed that that they might be above this material.
Mm-hmm.
Fred Astaire was the only one that kind of seemed to give a shit. And, well, I guess because he was essentially the star of the film, so...
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the son, a little bit, like you're saying, erratic. Like his reactions were just...
Oh, God, you guys have to... Somebody do a supercut and send it to us. It is... his reactions are the craziest to some... Like, they're so extreme to some of the most benign things.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are really out of context and out of place for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Alice Krieg is like, some of hers are crazy, but you realize there's a reason behind it. But him, you don't have anything, so it's hard. It's hard to get behind it.
And she was really good. I mean, as she always is, but...
Yeah.
She's fascinating to watch.
I get the feeling that it was just his everyday look. You're putting peanut butter on toast? And the powerful music. Dun, dun, dun.
Eyes open wide in terror.
Yeah. Yeah. Just nuts. He was just so bizarre.
And then the odd time he comes like, oh, you know, I killed your dog. And that's it.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, it's not appropriate.
Yeah.
Oh, did you know my brother died? Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very distinctly unemotional about that. I mean, he wasn't close to him, but wow.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, he would have the most extreme reactions to the most benign things, and then no reaction to the most extreme things. It was, oh, like, what is going on here?
Does do great scared face.
He does.
But at
the wrong things.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of this movie falls on the director, the lack of it, or just really bad misdirection.
Script and director.
Yeah. For a guy who did several successful Stephen Kings, I'm kind of shocked at how this one turned out.
Yeah, and again, that's where I think it more falls on the director than on the script.
Yeah,
because I think that we all heard horror stories about how directors take a good script and revisit it to the point where it's not recognizable as the original script.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And like I said, we were unfamiliar with the source material, so.
Yeah, so I mean, like, it's when you take the elements that make it make sense out,
mm-hmm.
that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Or well, add stuff that doesn't make sense.
I mean, if you're relying on the audience to have read the book going in and just leaving all those little key explanation stuff out, then you really don't have anything at all.
Well, it was a best-selling book. It was hugely successful. It got Mr. Straub up in his game. They got his name recognized. So I don't know if maybe that's it. Maybe we're just in the wrong time frame for this.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as far as adapting the material, even being unfamiliar with it, not a good adaptation.
Nope.
And, you know, if this was a best-selling novel, it was probably for a reason, and maybe another crack at it might be worthwhile.
Yes. Especially 35 years later.
Yeah.
Hey,
we're
guys.
Not taking the novel into consideration with our remake because we haven't read it. So we're basing it on what we know with the elements from this movie.
Yep.
And we still think there's a good movie there. And it honestly, it sounds like the novel's batshit crazy.
It is crazy, but here's the thing with novels, though, you can pad out some stuff, and you can pad out some motivations, and you can pad out mysteries with like two or three lines. And in a movie, it's harder to do it without like just explicit dialogue.
I mean, if she's some sort of weird gothic monster that's, you know, and part of her is trapped under the water, then that might explain a little bit more, because there are certain things that are established with ghosts. They tend to be tied to the places of their death.
And she was all over the place.
She was in other states.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I don't know, maybe it could be another creature, or as well as she gains power by killing these people.
Either that, or she's still a ghost that's tied to the people and their relatives. Regardless of location, she's still tied to that family, those families.
Yeah, like what was it that?
Like we said before, we can establish more, but with their sons and daughters.
Yeah. Well, what was that movie? I think it's not Sinister, but it's the other one.
I almost went with the director of Sinister as the director of this movie.
But there's like a movie where they intimate that it's not so much houses that are haunted, but people that can be haunted. It's in like the trailer. I'll try and remember it, but
I'm not sure if that's
Patrick Wilson was in it. And I'm trying to remember.
I'm trying to remember the don't know, somebody will write us. I had to, I had a, one of my customers at Words and Pictures who listens to the show, and he sent us a message on Facebook the other day when we were talking about Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
And there was just something we were, about Topol. We couldn't, we couldn't put our finger on the Bond movie that was. And I guess he was listening to the podcast and then he shouted it out. It's For Your Eyes Only.
We got him in trouble on the bus.
And yeah, he got a lot of attention for it. So I love it when our fans are that passionate.
But you got to let us know this.
If we too got you in trouble in a public place, write us at Invasion of the Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com.
Nice.
And then you can tell us your story. Tell your friends about the podcast. Spread it around. Tell 5-10 friends. Tell your mom. Tell your dad. Tell the dog across the street. I don't care what you... Just make sure you tell everybody about it. If you're listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or wherever you found us, give us a 5-star rating. Write us a review. It bumps us up on the charts and lets more people see us. Do us that favor. We give this podcast to you free, commercial-free, every week. So... just do us that solid. We don't ask for your cash. We don't make any money. We do this at a loss. So just help us out, get more eyeballs on the show, and make us the, well, number one on iTunes is probably a stretch, but I'd like to make the top 100. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Cool. That'd be awesome. But I don't think I'm catching cereal anytime soon.
Yeah, no, this is it. I don't know. Maybe we should do some documentaries and try that way. We want to remake this documentary.
Well, hey, let's face it. The crime thing is the latest fad in podcasts. Everybody and their dog has got a podcast at this point. So
yeah.
We'll just do what we find fun, and hopefully you do too.
For sure.
All right. Well, that was Ghost Story from 1981, and hopefully we'll see it again somewhere in the 2000s. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe Hollywood's listening to us. We're watching you, Hollywood, giving you the ideas. And if you steal it from us, just, I don't know, mention it in an interview. It's fine.
We want a special
It's not like we own the properties or anything, but we're watching for
it. We'll take a credit.
That's right. Just do a special thanks to us or something in the credits. That'd be cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, I'm Jason.
I'm Sam.
I'm Trish.
We're out of here.